Om Namah Shivaya. Dear listeners of Shaivam.org, the next program is Spiritual Discourse. In this, you are about to listen an overview of Shaivam and Siddhanta. The title is Devaram and Thiruvasakam, presented by Shiva Madhusudanan Kalaichelvam. Thank you. Om Namah Shivaya.
Vidnalum Devarkum Melaya Vediyanai, மன்னாளும் அன்னவர்க்கும் ஆன்பாகி நின்றானே, தன்னார் தமிழளிக்கும் தன்பாண்டி நாட்டானை, பெண்ணாளும் பாகனை பெணு பெருந்துறையில், கண்ணார் கடல் காட்டி நாயேனை ஆட்கொண்ட அண்ணாமலையானை பாடுதுங்கா நம்மானாய், ஓட்டை மாடத்தில் ஒன்பது வாசலும் காட்டில் வேவதன் முன்னம் கடலடி, நாட்டி நான்மலர் தூவி வலம் செய்யில் வாட்டம் தீர்த்திடும் வான்மியூர் ஈசனே, நீரூரும் செஞ்சடையாய் நெற்றிக் கண்ணாய், நிலாத்திங்கள் துண்டத்தாய் நின்னை தேடி, ஓரூரும் ஒழியாமே ஒற்றித்து எங்கும் உலகமெல்லாம் திரிதந்தும் நின்னை காண்பான், தேரூரும் நெடுதீதி பற்றி நின்று திருமாலும் நான்முகனும் தேர்ந்தும் காணாது ஆரூரா ஆரூரா என்கின்றார்கள் அமரவம் பெருமானே ஆரூராயே, கார்புறவும் கருங்கூந்தல் செவ்வாய் வெண்ணகை பச்சை கன்னியோடும் தார்கமிழ் பூங் காந்தளந்தோட் குமரனோடும் மணிசிங்காதனத்து மேவி சீர்பரவாம் புலவர் நினைந்தன யாவையும் நல்கி சிறப்பின் வைகும் வார்புணல் சூழ் கமலை சூழ்வயர் கமலை தேவர்கள் சிந்தாமணியை மனத்துள் வைப்பாம். நமஸ்காரம். வித் தி பிளெஸிங்ஸ் ஆஃப் திருவாரூர் ஸ்ரீ யஜமானடன கமலவசந்த தியாகராஜ சுவாமி அண்ட் ஆல் மை ஆச்சாரியர்ஸ், ஐ தேங்க் யூ ஃபார் ஜாயினிங் த ஃபிஃப்த் டே செஷன் ஆஃப் த 10-day சீரீஸ் ஆர்கனைஸ்ட் பை சைவம் .org டைட்டில்ட் அன் ஓவர்வியூ ஆஃப் சைவம் அண்ட் சித்தாந்தம். ஸோ த ஃபர்ஸ்ட் டே 4 days வி ஹவ் அண்டர்ஸ்டுட் த இம்பார்ட்டன்ஸ் ஆஃப் ரிலிஜன், the branches of Vedic religion, the authority of Vedas, how are they classified and how they pave a way as an original track might be a bit too challenging to walk, but the first track has been laid by the Vedas. As an extension, the Vedantas, Itihasa Puranas, and how to be more specific to Shaivam religion, we have got the Agamas, which are directly inferred and pulled out as subjects from the Vedas without any ambiguity. The books that claim the Paratvam of Shiva and speaks about various ways to worship him, to rever him, to understand him and are connect with him as a well laid out philosophy protected by the timeless works of the Acharyas who have groomed this particular religion. We also understood how Shaivism is not restricted to India. It's an international concept. How in various civilizations, the worship of what looks like a Shivalingam has been there for several millennia now. And in our own country here in India, the oldest dated civilization, the Indus Valley civilization, we have seen how various excavations that were conducted in many sites have brought out, exposed to the outside world about the how Shaivism as a religion has been absorbed by the people starting from Indus Valley, worship of Shivalingam and Pasupati seals, Nandi emblems and all that. And we also saw about the way Parameshwara is celebrated in Vedas and in the timeless classics of Tamil Shangam works, which belongs to the southern part, more like a culture that has evolved here. And how Shaivism is one of the many common aspects which bridges both these works from both these languages, namely Sanskrit and Tamil. So as a pan-Indian concept, Shiva has been revered since time immemorial, accepted by peoples of various walks of life, and their greatness here in South India has been exposed best through the 63 celebrated Nayanmars. Yesterday's lecture was on the great devotees. So we, given the 1 hour time frame, we could only particularly get to know about a few of them, but as an overview in general, the greatness of the Nayanmars, their selfless service, sticking on to their dharma which they have taken up for themselves, expressing their love for Shiva and his devotees in the best way possible given their constraints, social, economic, cultural constraints, how people from various different parts of South India belonging to different castes and community cutting across the spectrum of society, how they have expressed their love and devotion to Shiva and his devotees, and how their prayers have been answered, how Shiva, in order to bring them out, bring their type of devotion and their love out to us, has tested them till the final moment and how they stood still in their vratam and how Shiva granted them liberation finally. So that was about the great devotees. We come to know of these devotees through the works of Sundaramurti Nayanar. We also saw about the greatness of Thiruthondar Thogai as an individual work. Finally, after getting to know about all these Nayanmars, yesterday's lecture I had concluded it telling that out of all these 63 individual Nayanmars, three of them are celebrated more, referred to individually as Mover Mudaligal, along with Manikavachakar, the group of four very important devotees. In many temples of Shiva, especially here in South India, we see shrines where all the 63 Nayanmars plus the 9 group devotees are enshrined as Moola Vigraha and Utsava Vigraha, and their Guru Puja days are celebrated. And in some temples there is also a practice of bringing them all out in a very grand procession as a part of the annual celebrations and all that. But in temples where there is a time space constraint where all 63 of them cannot be accommodated, people ensure at least a separate shrine for these four people is enshrined. Now this will not differentiate them from the remaining Nayanmars of the 63 or put them at a higher plane. That's never done. We don't compare and contrast or evaluate the devotees based on their devotion or otherwise. These devotees have left behind, these four especially, have left behind voluminous songs as works, bringing to light the philosophy that helps us who've come here after 1500 years of their time to understand, immerse ourselves in the Shaivite traditions, understanding the greatness of Shiva. They have simplified the quotations from Vedas and various other scriptures, the authorized scriptures, because all of that belongs to a language which is not understood by all of us. There are these kind of constraints. So they have made it extremely regional, removed parts that might cause confusion, removed parts that are best understood by scholars, and to make it more easy for all people at the same time, have given it out direct without any ambiguity into regional languages. Every region of India has such devotees who have brought out the philosophy in their own regional languages, but the oldest probably and the most vast collection of literature is from these four people with respect to Shaivite tradition. So they are celebrated as the Nalvar Perumakkal, and all four have exposed their devotion, have expressed their devotion in a different way to Shiva. And all that they knew was to do Shiva Bhakti and worship his devotees and bring out to the world, teach us as the Acharyas. That's why these four are referred to as the Samayacharyas. They are the Pradhana Acharyas when it comes to Shaiva Samaya. And the order generally chosen is Sambandhar, followed by Appar, followed by Sundarar and Manikavachakar. So these are the four most prominent ones. But please, once again I reiterate, nothing is that they are special and others are, on a comparison scale and all. It is a great sin to compare between devotees or speak about why one person is important or otherwise and all. But we are celebrating them for a simple reason, that they have been Acharyas who have taken concern in us to leave behind all that they learnt from Parameshwara himself as works in a very simple language to help us understand. Even though they are not physically present here to clarify in other things, they are still pretty much active here. Speak to us through their revered works and help us clarify our doubts, know about Shiva and the religion. So Bhakti Marga and its greatness, we discussed about this yesterday, and how one of the aspects of following the Bhakti Marga is to celebrate the Bhaktas themselves. How it is very important to put them at par with Shiva, and worshipping the devotees, performing what is called as Maheshwara Puja, the anushtanams to be followed for Maheshwara Puja. Maybe on the 10th day when we speak about traditions and rituals, I'll throw some light on it. But inviting them over, respecting them like Parameshwara has visited our house, offering them a seat and offering them food and gifts and taking their blessings, in simple, is Maheshwara Puja. So how the devotees are to be celebrated. How it has been an age-old practice to install murtis of these great devotees in various temples, celebrate their Guru Pujas, organize festivals, organize spiritual scholars, religious scholars to deliver lectures on the greatness of these people and about their works, and more importantly, sing their own compositions traditionally in front of Shiva. There are various schools in rendering and all that, but today we'll just see about their lives. Tomorrow is reserved for the 12 Thirumurais, where I'll cover more on their works exactly. So this is what makes these Nalvar more common, and time and again we think about them and, you know, put them as Samayacharyas, because they have taken the concern of an Acharya to think about us, who will come several thousand years later and have left behind the essence of their knowledge through their compositions. Now, yesterday in our lecture on Agamas, we discussed about the four parts that makes into an that goes into making an Agama: the Chariye, Kriye, Yogam and Jnanam, and how upper Sambandhar, Sundarar and Manikavachukar followed each of the path for their moksha. So I'm just following the same order of upper followed by Sambandhar, Sundarar and then Manikavachukar. So their life histories, their the charitrams of these great souls are to be understood from Periyapuranam. So upper Peruman, he was born in part of northern Tamil Nadu, what can be called as northern Tamil Nadu, in a small village called Thiruvamur, in the community of Vellalars, who were predominantly agriculturists, who were into cultivation and as a profession. So he was born in a family of great Shiva devotees, his father, his mother, everybody. And the childhood that probably he had has been extremely challenging. He had an elder sister called Tilakavatiya, a woman whom we all should remember and praise for a simple fact. Maybe if not for her, we are not sure if Upper Peruman would have been brought here. It was all the divine play of Parameshwara to use her as a tool to relieve him of all the bondages that held him over here, initiate him into Shaiva religion and make him as one of the stars in the constellation of Shaiva devotees. So Marunikiyar, as he is called, had a very, very challenging childhood. He lost his parents. A little before their death, his parents have engaged a suitable groom to their daughter, sister of Upper Peruman. He was a warrior who is gone. After the engagement, he has gone to fight a battle on the request of the king. Unfortunately, he also dies there. The sister and brother, both of them, they have lost their parents, and the person who was engaged for getting married to her, she has lost her also. And not sure what to do with all their wealth in hand, both sister and brother felt immensely worried. And her sister thought, after the death of someone who was engaged to her and having lost her parents and all that, thought of finishing her life at that level. But on the request of Upper Peruman, who said, like, I'm only dependent on you now. I don't have anyone else but for you. And that love held her from finishing her life off. Both sister and brother decided to part with their wealth, and they gave up all their wealth to the needy people. And the sister chose Buddhism as a healing sense to begin with, but again, as always, it was a divine command of Shiva to include her as one of his devotees. So she was born, they were living in Thiruvamur, which is very close to Thiruvadigai Veerattanam, one of the Veerasthalas where Shiva did the Tripura Samharam. So she went there, submitted herself to Veerattaneshwara, considered herself to be a servant to serve him day in and day out in the temple. So she took up on the Charya Marga too. She cleaned the temple, sweeped it, mopped it, made garlands for worship and all that. When she was into this, it was almost the same time, Upper Peruman, not knowing what to do, curious about the unstable nature of the world, not being taken over by wealth and all that, after having parted with their wealth, wanted to understand or find out answers, took on a journey to find out answers for his spiritual quest, all the questions that he had. So he went on a spiritual journey, and that's when, after understanding several religions, he thought that there is solace in the Jain religion. So he approached one of the leading schools of Jainism in those days in a place called Pataliputram, which is almost close to or a part of today's Kadalur town in the state of Tamil Nadu. So he comes here, decides to stay here, very close to Kadalur probably. He decides to stay there in this very popular school of Jainism, wherein he is initiated into the religion, taught all the scriptures. He becomes a scholar in the religion. People who opposed him, like schools of Buddhism and others, who opposed him in debates, lost. So in a very short while, he went on to become a celebrated scholar within the Jain fold, to such an extent that the Jain people, the Jain community there, started considering him as an Acharya, gave him the title Dharmasena. So that's one of the surnames that they take, that the Jain teachers take. So he was given the title, maybe an Acharya Diksha Namam as Dharmasena, and he governed the Gurupeetam from here, and so he became a very popular teacher. So as time passed, sister has entered the Shaivite fold and had submitted herself totally to the Lord of Tiruvadigai Veerattam, and the brother has entered Jain fold and have become a celebrated scholar there, a very popular scholar, and learnt all the scriptures, so much so that he could oppose other religions. That was what was there. Her sister was worried that her brother is doing this, but took it as a divine play of Shiva and waited for Shiva's intervention, only prayed to him. And when the time was ripe to bring him back to the fold, Parameshwara started his divine play of making him worried about an ailment, through an ailment. He became medically weak, developed a kind of a pain in his stomach, which was terrible to put up with. The Jain tradition, which is several centuries old, and they have had a lot of scholars in it, they also have different branches wherein they practice schools like astrology, medicine and all that too. So they have their own tantric practices also. So they tried doing all the medications within their reach. They gave him actual medicines, traditional medicines probably, tried their hands on tantra and chanting different mantras to ward off the evil probably, to help him and all that. But if only anything, all these activities caused more pain to Upper Brahman. Insufferable, couldn't bear it. And the news of this reaches his sister, who was in Tiruvadigai, which is also close to Pataliputra. And when this news reached, and you know, when Upper Brahman wanted to see his sister, because he was failing to console himself, and the medicines didn't work, and it was getting unbearable day by day. So one fine night, he thought, let me elope, go have a darshan of my sister, let me meet her. As a great religious scholar, probably he had given up on all his physical bond and all that, the relationship that he shared with his sister, but if only the religion and its teachings have been real, truthful and strong, this bondage, irrespective of the pain, would have still not sprung back. It wouldn't have reminded him that probably meeting his sister would console him. That is the difference between other religions. So the kind of help that Shaivism as a religion, as propagated by our acharyas, does is to help us come out of all these bondages. So given the fact that he was following Jainism till then, it was probably spiritually weak, he thought he could be healed by going and seeing his sister. But the people there, you know, considering his Shaivite background and other things, weren't probably ready to allow him. So he had to elope one night, and he probably reached Tiruvadigai. At twilight probably he started and reached Tiruvadigai early in the early hours, went straight to the matam where his sister was staying, fell at her feet flat, told her all that had happened, and all that her sister did was to walk him up to the front, to the temple, to the courtyard of the temple, prayed to Adigai Virataneshwara, gave him Vibhuti Basma, chanted the Panchashara Mantra, and told him this is the best medicine that she is aware of. What more does someone need when in pain but for the Panchaksharam and the Vibhuti Prasadam? So that healed Upper Brahman immediately, that he started singing. He was relieved of the pain which he was suffering in his abdomen, unbearable. And the moment Vibhuti went on his forehead and he started chanting the Panchaksharam, miraculously it cured him. There have been several occasions, even in the recent past, when Panchaksharam and properly worshipped Bhasma Prasadam of Parameshwara has healed several issues, both physical and mental. So this is only one such millions of examples. And that was good enough to bring upper back, and he starts singing right then. That is probably the first level. He was initiated probably at that level, right in the front of the front courtyard of the temple of Tiruvadigai Virattanam. He starts singing there. A very, very moving composition comes out right at that moment. And then Upper Brahman sets on a pilgrimage. So when he was in Jainism, and when there was pain that he couldn't bear, he was reminded of his sister. But once into Shaivam, these bondages never was a concern for him. He was just in search of Shiva, and he starts on a very long pilgrimage, and he visits Chidambara Kshetram, stayed there, got involved in the beautiful form of Natarajamurthy, spends his days there, doing a lot of service in the temple, singing the praise of Parameshwara. After some time, he gets to know about Jnanasambandha Peruman, who was living in Sirgadi, very close by, wanted to see this Sivajnana, the child which is just immersed in Sivajnana. So he made a trip to Sirgadi and was welcomed by Jnanasambandha Peruman. Both of them together worshipped with Oni Appar. Then Upper Peruman takes leave, only to be joined by Jnanasambandha later. Goes on a very long pilgrimage, visits several hundreds of shrines all across India, the length and breadth of India, and his compositions have been documented through various his compositions have been documented. So the complete journey that Upper Brahman did is all documented by Shekhara. So he goes on a long journey. En route, he performs a lot of miracles in many places, all for the benefits of other Shiva devotees. All the miracles that these Jnanacharyas did through their compositions have always been for the betterment of other individuals or the community as a whole. So their thought has always been wellness of the whole universe. There is nothing, absolutely there is nothing that they look out for themselves. After performing several miracles like that of bringing back to life the little kid of Apudi Adigal who was poisoned by a snake bite and more like that. But even before all of this, there were other miracles which strengthened the confidence of Upper Brahman. The moment he came out of Jainism, ventured into Shaivam, and started propagating it, the Jain scholars who were dependent on him probably from Pataliputram weren't very happy with this, approached the king, told him that this is very necessary now to set it right, because our religion, the king was also a Jain probably, and it was a very common trend during the Pallava periods. A few of them have been Jains, and unofficially it was more like a state religion. And so a lot of Shaivite temples couldn't even function, and a lot of endowments created for Shaivite temples weren't happening. So under such circumstances, the Jain scholars decided to take it up with the king, tell him that this is not a very healthy move. If Upper Brahman has shifted over to Shaivam from being a Jain now, it might have a repercussion on the popularity of our religion. So under the king's supervision in a few cases, under his command, the Jainas went on to cause a lot of trouble to Upper Brahman, trying their best to give him cause a lot of pain by making him drink poison in the Rajadarbar, burying him in soil and making a roaring elephant to knock off his head, making him sit in a kiln through night, lime kiln, which causes unbearable heat, and it can kind of burn you off. And finally, when nothing worked, because in every case his meditation on Shiva's holy feet helped him from any damage being caused or any trouble being caused, finally they thought they'll bundle him up with a rock and throw him in the ocean, and they actually did it. And again, it was the mahima of the Panchakshara, the great Panchakshara mantram, that saved him, washed him ashore, and he was relieved again. The king thought this is much beyond our capacity to understand as to why this is happening this way, and so he gave up on questioning Upper Brahman. So that's how he was relieved from the pains that they caused. So Upper Brahman went on a long journey, stayed some days in Sirgadi with Sambandha, then went on to do a lot of miracles in various shrines, and he accompanied Sambandha Brahman at the phase also. They both travelled together, and they were also accompanied by Muruganayanar and a few others up until Vedharanyam, where both of them performed the miracle of opening the temple doors and closing it back. So that happened. And then Upper Brahman Nyanasamanda Peruman had a role in Madurai, so he had to go there. So they both split at Vedaranyam. Upper Varman continued his journey and ventured to make a yatra to Kailasha. So he went on, cut across today's Andhra, Karnataka, Madhya Pradesh, all these areas, took a dip in all the sacred rivers, worshipped Shiva in all those shrines en route, went to Varanasi, took a dip in the Ganges, sung the praise of Vishwanatha, then ventured into the most challenging Kailasha Yatra. The Kailasha Yatra performed by Upper Brahman, as detailed out by Shekhar, is extremely moving. The kind of challenges that we face as Yatrikas to Kailash, even today, with all these comforts in travel and logistics and all that, people who traveled will know about it. Imagine something like that happening 1400 years back. Someone from a remote village in Tamil Nadu walking all this way up to Kailasha with extreme confidence and a sankalpa not to turn back without the darshan of Kailash. So he tried his best and tested to the maximum extent possible, that he lost whatever little liking probably he had for his physical self. Of course, he didn't carry anything like that. So he was not worried about his physical self just wearing down and falling apart. So when he couldn't walk, he started crawling. When he couldn't crawl, he started rolling. Did all that he could do. And after testing him to the maximum extent possible, Parameshwara appeared in front of him, told him that it is quite a challenge to go up to the Kailasha, asked him as a rishi, he came in front of him as a rishi and echoed that he can take a dip in the pond which was nearby. And he said he'll get the Kailasha darshan by doing that. And he took a dip in the pond, only to come out of a pond in Trivayyaru, Panchanadeshwara Kshetram, where it was the full moon, the new moon day of the month of Adi, Shravana Masa, and that is when the unparalleled darshan of Kailasha, Shiva and Parvati on the Rishabha, surrounded by all the other Shivaganas there, and Rishis and all of them, Upper Brahman got a divine glimpse of it and documented that also. Then he again continued his pilgrimage, visited several places, and came back to Tirupugalur, where he did Udavara Pani, which is to clean the temple and to sweep and mop and all that. And he spent his last days in Tirupugalur to worship the Murti there and attained moksham there. So his compositions, which according to our scholars runs into several thousand titles, but we haven't got all of them. The process of how we got all this, probably in tomorrow's lecture we will see, but in all the cases, we didn't get the complete set of Devarams composed by all three of them. So in Upper Varumans, whatever we have got, we have managed to get, it has been compiled into three Thirumurais by Nambirandar Nambi. Of the 12, the 3rd, 4th and 5th Thirumurai, which is called as Devaram, contains the compositions, all of that of Upper Varuman. So that's about Upper Varuman.